Here we are. We've made it. You've made it. I'm glad you guys stuck through us with this awesome, really, really fun celebration.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Celebration of Halloween, the entire franchise, every movie, every reboot.
Getting towards the end.
Every up and down, you know?
A lot of ups and downs. I think more ups than downs.
Sure, a lot more ups than downs for sure, but man.
When the downs are down.
Oof, those downs are down.
They are low.
Yeah. Well, luckily, today, the culmination, I don't think there were any downs at all. We're looking at the hard reboot 2018 David Gordon Green directed Halloween, just simply titled Halloween.
No downs for you? Oh, that's good to hear.
Not in these three.
I like to hear that.
Let me make sure.
Did you do a pro-con list? Did you split it up?
No.
It's looking good, huh?
Looking real good, man. This was a lot of fun.
I have more good to say than bad, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll let it develop. Let's see.
For sure. I mean, you know, so this is a hard reboot of the series. This eliminates every movie that came before it except the OG original one.
That's right, Matt.
Jamie Lee Curtis is back for her first of three final fights with Michael Myers.
That's right.
She's no longer, you know, the character, Laurie Strode, no longer a sibling. She's not in hiding. She's not under a different name. There's no Josh Hartnett. She's just a baddie old prepper still in Haddonfield.
That's right.
She preps everything but where to live. I don't know. She stayed there 40 years after the original. She's waiting for Michael to come back.
Yep.
But he's been locked up. He's been locked up.
Don't let him out.
I thought the intro was so cool.
Yeah, man.
The reporters who go and they go to see him, and he's like chained to a cinder block in a courtyard with a bunch of other locos. And one of the reporters got his hands on the mask, and he brings the mask out, and it changes the energy in the courtyard.
Right.
You know, the guard dogs start barking. One of the crazies start barking.
Do you feel it, Michael?
They all start screaming and yelling, and Michael's just standing there, and he's not looking.
Yeah.
They show a little bit of his face, I think. And one cool little detail is they made sure to put a scar on his left eye.
I noticed that. Yeah, that's great. From when she stabbed him in the needle with a needle.
With the wire hanger, so, I think, right?
Or was the wire hanger?
Yeah, the sewing needle was the neck.
You're right. I call myself a Halloween fan. Jesus Christ.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, like the tone set very early. It was intense. The music was rising. And then this dude's holding the mask behind Michael. Michael won't even turn around and look at him. And he's yelling at him, you know, do you feel it? And then just boom, hard cut. Halloween.
Yeah, those like crash zooms going on. Yeah, like, dude. Yeah, it was awesome.
It was a fun movie. I mean, and then the intro was very like the original, you know, just all the credits on the right side, the pumpkin on the left. Like, it was really, this trilogy is a love letter to a lot of the movies that it erases.
100%. Yeah. You could see people who made it were fans. And I'm nostalgic for this movie, honestly. I mean, it's only, I guess, 7 years ago at this point, almost eight.
Our little baby's growing up.
Yeah, but that was a great time for me. That particular I saw it Halloween Day.
Nice.
I don't remember when it came out, but it was Halloween 2018, and I was living with my mom and sisters, and we were getting ready for a Halloween party. We'd never thrown a Halloween party, I don't think, at least not in a long time. And my mom was gonna invite her coworker friends, my sisters, their friends. I had a few friends I invited over, but I made some badass decorations, some creepy fucking decorations. And
nice.
It was going to be a ball, and before the party actually went off, my buddy Simon, he came over, and we're like, let's go fucking see this movie real quick, then we'll go back to the party.
Yeah. What a way to set the tone.
Yeah, and it was the first Halloween movie since the fucking Rob Zombie movies, and that at that point, that had almost 10 years.
Yeah,
9 years. So I was
psyched.
The
longest gap, I think, in between Halloween movies, I think the longest gap before that was like 6 years.
Right.
So it had been a while.
Yeah, so I was super excited. We went, you know, smoked a little doobie probably, saw the movie, and I thought it was super solid. Went back to a bitchin' Halloween party, dude. Like, you wouldn't think, yeah, your mom's coworkers at a Halloween party, it's probably going to be lame. It wasn't. It was a lot of fun. Yep. And I proceeded to go even cooler Halloween party after, you know.
Oh,
with,
shit.
With the, you know, fellow young people
party
like me.
Party hopping.
Got so fucked up. I went as...
Did anybody die in a barn?
Almost.
Nobody died. Successful Halloween party.
It was me. I almost died, but... I came dressed as Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver, Robert De Niro's character.
Okay.
Shaved the mohawk on my head when my sister did.
Nice.
And I got way too fucked up. Too many Jello shots.
Ooh, dangerous.
Too many blunts.
Dangerous.
In the mix of those things, I ended up puking my guts out for like fucking 40 minutes in my friend's backyard.
That's a lot of minutes.
I don't know. Maybe it might have only been like fucking 4 minutes, but it felt like 40.
That's true.
It was miserable, and this fucking skanky-ass chick. Mm. Remember Gail the Snail from Always Sunny?
Sure.
I don't know. She was like that. She was going around the whole time of the party. She went up to my friend. She's like, hey, are you one of the single guys here? Just like trash. Just total fucking slut. Dirty whore bag. And,
Gail the Snail.
I'm throwing up. She comes up to me, and she's like, hey, guy. She starts like fucking poking me and shit. Hey, are you okay? You coming down on something? Are you holding? I'm like, I'm not holding anything. Get the fuck away from me, crazy bitch. And she starts like touching herself like weirdly.
Really?
And then like starts like climbing on top of me.
This sounds like
disgusting.
A horror movie.
It was. I was fucking sexually assaulted that night.
Well, you're going to jail, Gail.
So anyways, Halloween 2018 makes me think of that. I don't know.
Nice.
And but I had a good time. Overall, it was a good time.
It's all that matters.
Yeah.
It's all that matters.
I'm a victim, and first step is acceptance. And
right. I stand with you. I stand with all victims.
Thanks, brother.
I believe all victims. You too. Hashtag you too. Not me. I'm not a victim.
That's very noble of you.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Anyways.
A couple victims in this movie. A couple victims of death.
Yeah.
Really cool nods back to a lot of movies. I wrote... What do we got? I got the heavy breathing is back in this movie.
Yes.
Very rad. I wrote subtle nod to the cult movie, but I don't remember what they did.
Ooh, now I'm trying to think.
Yeah, it was like a real subtle nod to the cult. It was probably like a throwaway line or somebody being sarcastic or something. But it was a subtle nod to the cult movie, and then... I wrote bathroom nod to H2O with the bathroom scene.
Mm.
And I think that's the one. See, but then that's not H2O. That would have been 6. Maybe that's what I was thinking about when he was where they're at like the rest stop and he kills the two reporters.
Yeah.
He you know, he goes stall by stall opening it up. And, I mean, that scene was just brutal when he reaches the stall that the lady reporter was in. And she had heard him come in and heard him opening the doors. She's freaked the fuck out. And he had already killed another dude outside and just reaches over the stall and drops his teeth on the floor.
Yeah, it's pretty cold.
Chilling. Yeah. Chilling. Yeah. And then he ends up killing them both.
Yeah. Yeah, rips that guy's jaw off. You don't see it happen, but you see the aftermath. It's pretty cool.
Woo!
Yeah, some gnarly kills in this movie. Yeah.
It's definitely very intense.
The tracking shot that happens with Mike after the fact, after he gets his mask back, after he kills his reporters. He's just going around. Everyone's trick-or-treating. It's nighttime.
Yeah.
He's just going like house to house. He doesn't have a weapon, really, so he goes to this one house. You're just following the whole time. Then he goes into this woman's kitchen, and he goes left. He goes out of sight, out of the doorway.
And he
picks up a hammer and fucking... bashes her in. You don't see it, but then you see him just drop the hammer, pick up a kitchen knife, then you continue to follow him, and then you see the aftermath of him,
right,
of his murdered victim, and then he passes like a crying baby at one point. He stops, looks, and just continues on his way.
Yeah.
One of those moments like, what the fuck you about to do, Michael?
Right,
come on, don't go that far.
Yeah.
He already killed a kid at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that sequence was like classic Halloween. It's just like that little like 5-minute sequence was... That almost sold the whole movie for me.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some other nods. I think it's in the next one, so I'll save it for when we talk about that. But
yeah.
The nod to Halloween 3. Danny McBride wrote these movies.
He co-wrote them, yeah.
And there are parts that you could tell. It's just 100%. Like, this movie was funny, dude.
Yeah.
I forget whose dad it was. Oh, so Laurie is a grandmother in this movie. She has a kid. The kid had, you know, in the time in between Halloween 1 and Halloween 2018, has distanced herself from her mother.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks she's crazy. She thinks she's obsessed with Michael Myers. I can't do this anymore.
Right.
Starts her own family, has a daughter. But her husband is very funny.
Yeah.
Her husband's great. There's a scene with these two cops that you could tell was 100% Danny McBride.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's completely useless.
Yeah.
You could take it out and it doesn't change the movie.
Right.
But they're sitting in this car just talking about, like, lunch.
Yeah.
And, like, the one cop is just really talking up this type of sandwich. And the other cop's like, I don't want it. I got my lunch. Yeah. And it's like a corner piece of a brownie and like a dollop of fudge. Like it's so stupid, but it's so funny.
Yeah, it's just a little color for these little minor characters.
Yeah.
You know, that brings a little levity to the whole situation. Yeah. So I like it. I like those little touches. And I like Michael in this movie throughout this whole trilogy.
I
think it's my favorite Michael. And the reason is you know, the OG Michael is great because he's very unassuming. He's just an average height guy, you know, not particularly bulky, you know, but he has superhuman strength.
Right.
He can take some shots, can lift people up with one hand.
Sure.
What have you. He's very slick, very sleek.
Yeah.
Like a cat. Very silent. And I like that about him. He's like ghostly-like, which, you know, goes with the mask. It's very ghostly-like. Right. And I like the way he moves. Then you got, like, the Rob Zombie ones where he's just like a hulking fucking brute, right? Just fucking brutal, dude. Just
that one might be my favorite, Michael.
Super destructive, and I get it. For me, James Jude Courtney, who plays this Michael, is a good mix of the two in a way. In a way, because I like he still maintains this kind of supernatural edge, whereas Michael in the Rob Zombie version, who is absolutely terrifying for sure, he feels like a human, you know. He feels like a person.
Yeah.
Who's just fucking super huge and strong.
Right.
But like James Jude Courtney ones, who's like, he's big guy, you know. He's tall, but he's not like, you know, like oddly tall. He's not.
Right.
I know
what you mean.
He's kind of sort of slender in a way.
Yeah.
Just compared to like Tyler Mane in the Rob Zombie ones. But he maintains that ghostly, like, kind of movement in the way he walks and in the way he just kind of composes himself.
Yeah.
I really like, mixed with how fucking just brutal he can be, too.
Absolutely.
And those little micro movements, he just has a sort of callousness to him. Like, in that sequence where the tracking shot where it's like one take where the woman's on the phone and you see him on the side going into her backyard, you see a silhouette walk down and she's on the phone and she looks out into the blinds towards the camera and you see him behind and he stabs her through the neck. And then,
That one was intense.
But the way he just kind of like drops her body, like there's this sort of like callousness to it. He's very like quick and like one to like, psh, and then just, psh,
yeah,
just,
like I'm done here.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing more to do.
It's very callous. It's rough too. And,
whereas, like we mentioned in the other one with the Rob Zombie, there's a lot of lingering.
Sure.
You know, like he played it as, like, soaking in the kill.
Mm.
This Michael was like, I'm here for business, and I'm moving on to the next contract.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Sure. But he does maintain his playfulness. He does, like,
set. Silly little cat.
Yeah, sometimes he'll set the bodies up if he has time.
Yeah.
He'll, like, you know, like, little, like, action figures and shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially towards like the later movies, but what else you got?
Do we remember why he came back to Haddonfield? In this one, I just remember he got out and then he's back. He's back, you know. He's tormenting the town.
Well, he never really left. I don't think like the bus got that far, so he's already in, like, at least the vicinity.
Yeah.
And it's what he knows.
Right, right. Yeah.
He's just going back home.
He's probably just going home, yeah.
That is what he's doing.
The man just wants to sleep.
But the only reason that happened was because the doctor,
right,
Sartain,
literally let him out. Brought him to Laurie.
Which I like that twist. A lot of Halloween stands don't like that. Like, it's fucking stupid. Oh, the Dr. Sartain. Oh, it's dumb. I'm like, why? Like, it's a good new way to, like, explain Michael getting out, you know, rather than the old, oh, he escaped and there's no explanation why, like the first one.
Right.
You know, it's just fine. Or it's like the Rob Zombie ones where he just muscles his way out.
Yeah.
This one, like, there's an external force who's, like, obsessed, who's got his own sick motivations.
Yeah.
Which absolutely. I think is very neat, honestly. I thought that was really cool. Laurie Strode was the one who got away. Mm-hmm. And he's like, all right, let me kind of cure it. Let me lead him towards her.
Yeah.
He can
face
her for the last time. But
and, I mean, to be fair, that face-off was really intense.
Definitely,
you know, going around the house, and she's got her house. She's got this whole, like, underground bunker under the kitchen counter, and, you know, Lori's in there with her daughter, and then Lori's out of it, and then her daughter's in there with the granddaughter, and then, you know, the whole, like, third act, I guess, is focused around this house and this kitchen and these booby traps, and they end up trapping Michael down there. They literally cage him in, and they set the place on fire. And I thought that was so rad, because, as I mentioned with Resurrection, fire is always fucking cool.
Yeah.
Fire's definitely cool. And they thought they burned him alive, and they ran out, and then the movie just ends.
You a pyro. You a pyromaniac, Matt. Is this a confession?
I'm not saying I'm not. Okay. But, you know,
I'm not saying you are either.
You never seen me and a firefighter in the same room at the same time.
That's true.
But I mean, I really liked it. It sets up a whole new path. It sets up a new world for these movies. It sets up a new narrative, and I'm with it.
Well, it's cool because the way it ends, it's like it's just final enough, but it's just ambiguous enough where
like
they really meet that middle point where, and I think it was the fact like they ended a certain way where it's like, listen, we want to make sequels. But if this doesn't make money, then we're not going
to. Then
this
will be the end.
Yeah, and we want to end it on, like, a good note, and they did. And it made a shit I think, possibly to this day, it's the highest grossing R-rated slasher movie.
Nice.
I think so.
Who wouldn't be excited, man? It was good. I ended up giving it a 9.
That's a good score. I loved Same it. As Rob Zombie's.
Yep, yep.
Original
it's
one.
It's right up there with Rob Zombie for me.
I'd give it a... I'd give it a 3.5, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe a 4. Yeah, I couldn't find anything wrong with it. It's a safe movie, for sure.
Yeah,
does all the things right, and it does very well.
Yeah.
It's things that we've seen before, kind of. Dr. Sartain twist was, I don't know.
I thought it was pretty funny when he puts on the mask
for
like a half a second.
Yeah.
Like,
I just want to feel what it's like.
Yeah, he has this interesting angle when he's in the when he's in the car with the cop, and he's asking these questions out loud, and they frame it as if he's like studying Michael, and he's like, I wonder what he feels, and he's talking about like the feeling and the mentality of like in the moment of these kills and all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and then you find out that he basically like I don't know like wants to be Michael like in a sense like
mm-hmm.
so it makes you think about his motivations and his intentions, and it's like it just puts a new spin on it.
Definitely.
You know, where we've had 40 years of the doctor caring about Michael,
mm-hmm.
this new doctor is like, no, I want to be him.
Right.
Rad.
I think that's rad too.
Very rad. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. It's a good idea. It's a unique idea. And
it's a unique
unique
never
New
mind.
York.
Yeah,
unique New York. Unique New York. Yeah, I told you to do your exercises, Mike.
I should have.
But and solid fucking kills in the movie, dude. One of my favorite kills, which is basically off screen, but you see the aftermath, is those two funny cops. And they're funny, and you don't need, like, clown music to show that they're funny, which is cool. Like Halloween 5.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
you just need good writing. Who'd have thought?
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, Danny McBride wasn't maybe around during Halloween 5. Or
he probably had some notebooks or something. He was probably a young, aspiring teenager.
For sure.
He probably saw Halloween 5 and was like, I could do that so much better.
Oh, yeah.
And then
did. And he did. But, the one kill, the one cop, who happens to be the special effects makeup artist.
Right.
Who did all the fucking gory shit, all the body parts and, mm-hmm. and the carnage and what have you. Yeah, his death is one of the most brutal, which is funny. He gave himself the most... the most brutal death, but
he gave himself the coolest looking one.
The jack-o'-lantern head. Mike hollowed out his fucking head.
Yeah.
And put a flashlight in it. That's fucking sick.
And then put his head on the lap of the other dead cop. Yeah. Like, whoa, dude.
Yeah, so he's definitely, he's got a creative bent to him.
Michael's a funny guy.
Yeah, dude.
I want to hang out with him.
He's a cheeky bastard.
I want to hang out with him. But, like, behind 4 feet of bulletproof glass.
I get a beer with him behind 4 feet of bulletproof glass.
Yeah.
But, solid fucking Halloween movie.
Absolutely. So then after that, it's a little bit of a wait. You know, I mean, I get 2 years after this movie came out, the world shut down. And then just 1 year after that, they managed to bring out the sequel, Halloween Kills. 2021's Halloween Kills. A few years later, David Gordon Green.
More like Halloween Kills the franchise. No, I'm kidding.
Now, this one was
a lot of fun, dude. I love this movie.
This one was very fun. I think I mentioned to you, like, this movie, and it goes to the writing. Like, a good actor can pull off cheesy bullshit.
There's a lot of it.
This movie's very cheesy.
Oh, God.
You know, especially in, like, the last half of the movie. The first half, it does a really cool setup. It basically helps flesh out the painting of erasing all the other movies. So, like, after the events of the first one, he goes home, and we see that these two cops that responded to the kills and the terror of the OG first movie had an opportunity to basically kill him.
Right.
I put here there was a fun deception with the cop kill, because they frame it. The one cop, you know, it's these two cops in the Myers home.
No.
And the one cop goes into the sister's room where Michael committed his first murder at 6 years old. And he goes to the window and he looks down and he sees boot prints. And then the camera goes behind him and it looks like a classic POV shot of Michael.
Yeah.
And it starts moving forward. So as the viewer, you're like, I've seen this 100 times. Michael's going to push him out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the camera. Because then Michael comes in from the side. He starts fucking this dude up.
Classic red herring.
Yeah. And then the other cop, basically, who grows up to be the cop in the first movie.
Yeah, Frank. Yeah.
Fucks up. You know, like, damn. Michael's grabbing this dude. He's got his gun drawn. And he's a bad shot. And he shoots his buddy in the neck.
He should have just walked up to Mike and then just shot him.
Right. I mean, you know, hey, you're going to kill my friend either way. At least your hands are busy. I'm just going to walk up and just put this on your mask. But nobody thinks to go for the head.
It's, you know, plot armor.
I don't know what to tell you.
But, yeah, it is what it is, though. You know, it is very tragic, though.
Yeah. A lot of fun with that. What else we got? This second movie takes place in a hospital, which is a fun nod to the OG2, even though it kind of erases it.
True.
Laurie's in the hospital. The cop is in the hospital. They're friends. Yeah. And we learn through exposition later where he tells the story of how he fucked up and all this stuff. And he feels all this guilt. And a lot goes down in the hospital. A lot of it.
Well, going back to the two cops, just going back to the whole flashback sequences, I gotta say, very well done flashback sequences.
Oh yeah, yeah, they were fun.
They were fun. They somehow get, like, the lighting and the kind of color and cinematography as close as you can get of a modern movie to the first two movies, and just recreating the 1978 that night, and you know, there's all this pandemonium, Michael's on the loose,
yeah.
And there's the kids, you know, the kids that bullied Tommy Doyle from the first movie. Now you're seeing, like, them on Halloween night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now the kid who was bullying him, and now he's getting bullied.
Yeah.
By the Mulaneys.
Yeah.
Don't fuck with the Mulaneys. And
Mulaney rules.
Yeah, Mulaney rules. And Mulaney, I have a feeling you got a lot going on in your life right now. Right now, I got to study. And, it was cool seeing that kind of perspective.
Yeah.
And then you see him growing up later. But, right. Yeah, the flashback sequences were
great. Bless you.
Thank you. Top tier.
Yeah. We see, bless you.
Thanks.
We see Anthony Michael Hall is playing Tommy Doyle. It's the second time that we've seen this character grown up. The first time was our buddy Paul Steven Rudd.
The best portrayal, I would say.
I'm sorry again, Paul Steven Rudd.
Yeah.
But now it's he's a little bit older. It's 40 years after the event, because this is another one. It takes place right after, even though it came out a few years later. Mm-hmm. And
I think Paul Rudd was supposed to do it, honestly, like reprise role.
That would have been pretty cool.
Because he's done work, too, with David Gordon Green. Because David Gordon, he's made, like, Pineapple Express. He's, like,
he's made movies. Same dude?
Yeah, he's made movies with the Apatow kind of crew. That,
really?
Like, the whole Danny McBride. Like, he's made movies with Danny McBride, like, back in the day, too. Like, Pineapple Express, Your Highness.
Yeah, okay.
Eastbound and Down, he did some directorial work with. Like, he's a very much, like, he's very much a journeyman director.
He's a funny man.
Yeah, but then he's made, like, serious independent, like, dramas.
Cool.
And he's all over the place, this guy.
Didn't know that. That's really awesome.
Yeah, a little fun fact.
A little fun fact. Put that in your bank.
Yeah.
I put here, it's very Frankenstein-esque. Tommy Doyle really does a good job at rallying the town. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this really kick-ass scene in the hospital where it's just pandemonium. These people are freaking out. You know, like, you have townsfolk coming into the hospital seeing if their family members were victims of everything that went down in the first movie. And yeah, everybody's angry and the cops aren't doing enough. And he really rallies everybody. And even before that, where he just gathers pockets of people to search the streets for Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that aspect of the movie.
It was really, it was very Frankenstein-esque, like, you know, get your torches and pitchforks and totally hunt the monster.
Yeah, definitely raise the stakes. Cool. There was a little bit of that in Halloween 4. If you remember, it's just like some bartender seeing all the things happening on the news. Yeah. He's like, "All right, guys, let's go." And then, like, fucking, like, 10 guys, like, just, like, get up. All right, here we go. It's like a little militia that's already, like, just ready to go.
And then they kill a dude from the town.
Yeah, they don't even show him. They're like, "Oh, shit, dude, that's Bobby Fargus."
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, shit.
Like, they show up to, like, a gazebo, and one guy's, like, he sees a bush kind of rustle.
Yeah.
And then, like, four dudes just unload clips. And then they walk up, and they're like, "Fuck, that's Craig."
Yeah, yeah.
"You son of a bitch, you said you saw him."
Yeah.
I think that was the line. Yeah, yeah, that was fun.
But yeah, and then they kind of parallel that in this movie with the Danny DeVito looking fucking mental patient.
Yeah.
And they drive him to get fucking killed.
I mean, he had a bad day and it just got worse.
Mm.
You know, I wrote something about that. Like, I'd seen this movie before and I didn't like that part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, not that everybody had seen Michael, but, like, you gotta know that it's not this, like, short, stubby, I can barely walk. Like, he's not going around killing people.
Right.
And I wrote that it has to be some kind of commentary that the movie's doing on mob mentality.
It was pretty heavy-handed, I'd say.
And I put that I was too stupid to get it. Like, when I first watched it, and I was like, "It's fucking dumb."
Mm-hmm.
But then
it is a little dumb. Don't get me wrong,
it's supposed to be.
That's what they're going
that's
for.
That's the commentary. Yeah,
absolutely.
Because even like when they're storming through the hospital chasing this guy around, Lori is like trying to yell at them, like, "That's not him." She even like yells out, "You fucking sheep! It's not him." Like,
yeah, that's funny.
Okay, I guess I get it. Mm. You know, the Lori's daughter helps this dude basically trap himself in a hallway, and the mob just swarms in. They start beating the door down, and he ends up just jumping off the roof.
Yep.
And then, I don't know, it was kind of funny, but then also, like, this is so stupid. Like, after he died, how quickly they were like, "Yeah, I guess that wasn't him."
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he's already dead.
Yeah.
You know, and then they get a good look at him, and they're like,
"Yeah, it doesn't make sense."
Oh, yeah, by the way.
Now that he's dead, he's like, "Oh, no, that's not Michael." Like, you couldn't tell when he was alive.
When he was running at a mile and a half an hour.
Yeah. Well, now that his brains are splattered all over the pavement.
Right.
I think we got the wrong guy. And then Sheriff Brackett, you know, reprising his role from the first one.
Yeah, yeah. That was fun. That was very fun.
He looks at his corpse, he looks up, he's like, "He's turning us into monsters." It's like, yeah, I get it. You know, like, I get it. You have to say it. So
you,
on the
you
nose.
You don't say. But yeah, fun.
It doesn't ruin the movie for me, though, because it's just so much fun. It's absolute mayhem, dude.
Yeah.
It's just Michael unleashed, dude, and then we get, like, 2 hours of that, and I'm all for it,
absolutely.
Dude. And I noticed this movie, and the movie preceding it, It's a lot more stylistic than the first one.
Yeah, a lot of fun camera angles, a lot of fun zooms.
Yeah, the lighting, too, was is just a lot more colorful. And, whereas the one before it, and the one before is a little more, like, desaturated, a little more muted kind of the colors.
Yeah.
It was more clean kind of looking.
Yeah.
And
this one had a lot of red.
Yeah, a lot of reds and oranges and greens. And, he committed more to it. Yeah. It was a lot more stylistic in this one, which I liked.
Yeah. I put that there was, where do I have it? Real fun camera work, especially with Tommy. Like, when he would go on some of his monologues and some of his rants, like...
Swing old Huckleberry.
Yeah. I mean, like, and that is one of the many instances of, like, corny line. Like, the whole Evil Dies Tonight thing. Like, that's corny, but I'll tell you what, I'm riled up right now. Like, it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
This is the movie that has the nod to Halloween 3 when Michael kills literal children.
Love it.
But they're in the three masks from Halloween 3.
Great nod.
The pumpkin, the skull, and I was sitting there, and when they reveal the body of, like, the older lady, she's in the witch mask. And I remember sitting and saying out loud, like, there it is, like, because I was looking for it.
Yeah, yeah. Great homage.
Yeah, yeah. Just little subtle things like that. Like I said in one of the other older videos, if you don't know what you're looking at, you won't get it.
Right.
That's the kind of Easter egg that I like.
Yeah, it's not in your face. It's a nice little, look at that. You know what I mean?
I hate the Easter egg that tells you it's an Easter egg.
Right, yeah.
Like this one, if you never saw Halloween 3, you're just, oh, those are Halloween masks. But if you'd seen the movie, I know where that's from. That's fucking cool. That's how you got to do it.
Yeah, it works on both levels.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely how you got to do it. Let's see what else. Oh, this movie had a lot of shots of Michael that were just daunting, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Mixed with a killer fucking score.
Yes. Oh yeah.
There was like three or four different shots of Michael in this movie where he's just kind of looming and the camera's stuck on him, and I think like one or two of them he's not even center frame. He's just kind of off to the side, but you see him and it's just the environment and the Michael and the music, and it's the kind of shit that like I would screen grab that moment and turn it into a poster.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and yeah, the Carpenter, he came back for the score as well as his son, and it shows, and it's fucking awesome. It's one of the strongest points of all three of these movies.
And
I love hearing it. I love even just hearing like the subtle little variations of his already classic score that he does with it is very unique, as well as like the new stuff that he introduces to the movies. I agree, especially in that little chase sequence with Lindsay Wallace from the first movie, who's all grown up, after he kills like everybody in that ridiculous scene where he kills all those people in the car, and the nurse with the Desert Eagle starts shooting at him. He fucking kicks the door
and he
hits the gun, blows her own fucking brains out. Dude, the audience went insane when that happened. Dude, they were laughing their fucking ass off, and so was I. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was the perfect balance of ridiculous and fucking awesome.
I mean, like 10 seconds before that, the way he kills that lady's husband was crazy, because he's focusing on the old lady in the front seat.
Mm-hmm.
This dude's in the back, and he tries to, like,
strangle him.
He tries to strangle him with the fake stethoscope. And he's pulling on it, and Michael just turns. So he's like, you could tell he's just putting, like, not that he's not putting effort, but it's just not working. And it just goes to show, like, the power of Michael.
Right.
And he just turns around and just hits him with the knife in the eye.
Yeah, just like.
And you see him kind of just like twitch like out a little bit. And then, like, it was gnarly. It was gory. It was violent. And then 3 seconds later, he makes this lady shoot herself in the face.
Dude, fucking hilarious. But yeah, the preceding chase sequence right after that with Lindsay Wallace.
Yeah.
Through like those woods with those big ass trees, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's that little like stream with the bridge over it. You can see like the reflections of the water casting on like the bridge and the trees and Michael. And she's like hiding like by the big roots.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great fucking sequence.
Yeah,
it's a beautifully shot scene. A lot of tension. And one of my favorite sequences in the movie.
Yeah. And then as it ends, I mean, you know, they find Michael, the townsfolk, they proceed to Richard Ramirez him and beat the shit out of him in the street.
Yep.
And in good classic slasher fashion, nobody goes for the head.
Right.
And he ends up getting his, like a good kung fu movie, one by one, just starts taking them all down.
Yeah.
In like this really badass montage scene. A lot of zooms, a lot of stuff that was probably filmed, but like a mix between on location and and probably like in front of a black curtain or something. Because there was a lot of like frontal shots of somebody coming in and then, you know, just getting wrecked, getting stabbed, getting sliced, getting thrown around. Anthony Michael Hall bites it.
Yeah.
Great scene.
Yeah, I love that scene.
Tommy Loomis, man.
Yeah, because he's just so confident he's going to kill him the whole movie. And then, nope. And yeah, I like that scene where he stabs him and he's just looking into his eyes, like the haunting blackness of his eyes and his mask. It's pretty cool. Yeah, shout out Anthony Michael Hall. I like his take on Tommy Doyle.
Loomis? I said Tommy Loomis. My bad.
Oh, I didn't notice. But he's so he's always so like the nerdy guy in the 80s movies. Now he's a fucking grown up. He's just a meathead.
He's just a beefcake.
He's just a he's just that fucking guy, you know. And it's hilarious.
Yeah. It was a really fun movie. I really liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of fun, man.
Yeah.
One of my favorites of the franchise.
Yeah, I ended up slapping this one with an 8, just under the first one.
Yeah. I would give it a 3.5 as well.
Yeah.
I think, the one before it, I give it 3.5. I don't know. Yeah, I kind of like them equally, Halloween and Halloween Kills. I used to think I liked Halloween Kills a little bit more, but now I appreciate Halloween 1 a little bit more every time I watch it.
Yeah.
Less, fucking corny-ass dialogue, I guess, which, it's fine. But, some of the monologuing, it's like, oh, my God. Like, I get it, dude. Evil transcends. The more you fear, the stronger it gets. It's like, okay.
Save that shit for Freddy.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
The trilogy ends 1 year later. Halloween ends.
More like Halloween ends the franchise.
Am I right? 2022.
It won't.
Well, hopefully. Hopefully not. We have...
I've been there since the Rob Zombie movies. I've been there in the theaters for every Halloween since the Rob Zombie one. So, and I plan to... be there in the future.
Right. Yeah, no, you're a real one, dude. You're a real one.
I am.
We have another reference to The Thing in this movie. I think they're also watching it. But the fun thing is in the original OG Halloween, the reference to The Thing is they're watching the original 50s one. In this one, they're watching John Carpenter's version.
Yeah, gotta love it.
Which is fun. I mean, another thing, like if you don't know that John Carpenter directed Halloween and The Thing, you just think, okay, they're just watching a movie. Yeah. Whatever.
Also, like, if you don't know that, you don't probably know anything at all.
Right. I mean, you probably think the 2 + 2 = 4.
Right.
Dummies.
Fucking idiot.
What else we got? I wrote Kid Deserved It. And that's in reference to the opening scene. So, like, the main...
Yeah, he kind of did.
The main character, this
kid... Don't lock people in fucking attics.
Yeah, don't be a little piece of shit.
Yeah.
So, like, this kid, Corey, he's a babysitter. He's babysitting this little fucking brat.
Mm-hmm.
The mom said no TV and have him asleep by a certain time. And he figured, I'll cut the kid a break. We're going to watch a scary movie. They were watching The Thing. That's where the reference comes in. And the kid's just a piece of shit.
Yeah.
The kid's just a piece of shit. And I forget how they get there. They're playing a game or the kid runs off or whatever, but he runs upstairs and this Corey kid goes to find him. And then the kid locks Corey in a room. He's freaking out. I mean, it's not like Michael's there. It's none of that. He's just trying to get out and he's kicking this door. And he finally kicks it open, hits the kid in the face. The kid tumbles, falls over the banister, and falls like 3 floors as his parents are coming back from a party.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the details of that are just like, Jesus Christ. Like, they literally walk in the door, and the camera is set up so that you just see the body flop right in front of it.
best opening to a horror movie I've seen in years. Maybe my favorite, dude. I love it. Like the fucking subversion. You think, okay, Michael's back. He's not. Okay. The kid locks the babysitter in the attic or whatever the fuck you call it. He's freaking out. I assume he's just scared of the dark or something. He's like, fucking get me the fuck out of here. The kid's, you know, he's fucking with him. You know, obviously accidentally kills the kid, but like, yeah. The brutality, you know, the unintentional brutality.
The sound of that slam.
Seeing his head just like smack on the ground and then like flip up and then down. Blood pouring out immediately.
God.
It's very realistic, but it was like, oh my God, that's fucked. That whole situation's fucked. And then the mom screaming up at the stairs. He's got the knife in his hand. The whole thing looks bad. What have you done? Hard cut to John Carpenter's classic score, Halloween Ends. Oh, the opening credits, dude. The pumpkins.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite opening credit sequences of any Halloween movie. The pumpkins.
We're like morphing in and out.
In and out of like a Russian doll of pumpkins.
Yeah.
And then like the last pumpkin, it opens up. It's just like bloody guts and
shit. It's like like the webby, stringy kind of.
Yeah. Awesome.
And you mentioned it to me. I noticed that the intro, the credits were blue, which I thought was weird. They're always orange.
Right.
And you had mentioned that that's a nod to Halloween 3.
It had to have been.
That Halloween 3, those credits were blue.
I don't know if they ever confirmed it, but it had to have been. It's the only Halloween movie that had it. The same font, same color, that kind of light blue.
And
to me, it almost seemed like a signal. It's like, this is going to be different.
And it was.
From all the other Halloween movies, just like Halloween 3 was. Yeah. And it was. It absolutely was.
Good.
Yeah. By the way, opened with a banger of a song with those credits. Not the credits. I'm sorry. The pre-credits. Right before the credits, that like rockabilly kind of song.
Yeah.
Was really cool. Anyway.
This was one I didn't like when I first saw it because it was so different.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what stick I had up my ass because watching this rewatch, I thought it was great.
And you had seen the previews too first.
Yeah. So in this one, you know, Corey is this new like main character. We still have Laurie. We still have her granddaughter. Because Laurie's mother bites it at the very end of Halloween Kills. Mm. Spoiler. So we still have them, but now the movie's more focused around this Corey kid.
Wait, Laurie's who?
Laurie's daughter.
Oh, I thought you said mother. I'm sorry. No. Laurie's daughter. Yeah.
I mean, I guess whatever happened legally with this kid dying, Corey didn't go to jail or whatever. He's still living in town. He's working at like a junkyard. He's just trying to make ends meet and he gets bullied because he's like a weird kid. He ends up finding Michael, or I guess Michael finds him. Depends on how you think about fate.
No, he found me. He rescued me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, he gets bullied and he fucks up his hand. Laurie finds him, brings him to a hospital that her granddaughter happens to work at. They get set up. They go to a Halloween party. Corey has a bad night because they get drunk. They have a little bit of fun. And then at the bar is the mom of the kid that Corey killed.
Oh, God.
And she just lets him have it. You know, she's become a drunk. She's become, you know, her body, her life spiraled.
Yeah, of course.
So Corey's like, fuck this. Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Yeah, he's having the most fun he had ever had.
Yeah, like, he was having fun.
In years.
Yeah.
You know, and then she brought him down.
This one bitch got to bring up how I killed her son. Ugh.
Oh, God, you know, get over it.
So as he's walking home, you know, his bullies from earlier in the movie find him and they start fucking with him. They start fighting. They toss him over like this like low bridge and it's right by like a sewer pipe. And that's where Michael's been hiding.
Mm-hmm.
That's like his new like kind of lair. And, you know, I think Michael brings him in there, like he drags him in there. And there's something they don't really explain it. And I think it's okay. Like Michael just sees something in this kid. Sees like either that same kind of rage, that same kind of pain, because he doesn't kill him. He kind of like almost trains him.
Yeah, almost. It's weird. Their relationship is like, I don't know. Obviously nothing's said because Michael doesn't talk, but like it makes sense to me. Like I think a lot of people think the whole situation is ridiculous, but think about it like, try to think about it from Michael's perspective. I mean, he's beat to shit. He's like basically dying.
Yeah.
You know, he's feeling.
This is a very humanized Michael.
Yeah.
Like a realistic Michael.
Yeah, he's starting to feel his own mortality. You know, he was fucking brutalized in the previous movie.
Mm-hmm.
This kid just like almost, you know, he just like plops up on his doorstep almost. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
he's pretty
just,
much.
You know, he's no threat to Michael. You know, he witnessed like him, you know, being this victim, and it's like, to think about it, to Michael, it's like, why bother killing this guy? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's something interesting about him. Like, there's something going on.
Like,
he sees something in him.
The angle of like Michael training him in a sense. I would rather that than what the series has tried to do before, where it's like, I put my evil consciousness in you. What the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Because, like, with this, they start going out on kills together.
Yeah.
Like, they kill that one couple, and they do it together, and then Michael eventually stops going, and it's just this one kid.
Which I gotta wonder how that came to be, right? Like, logistically.
Right.
Because I assume the doctor and whoever, like, they live a little farther out there. Right. You know? Did Michael just hitch a ride on Corey's bike?
Yeah,
did he ride
his little bike.
Yeah, did he ride bitch on Corey's bike? Like, all right, Mike, let's go hop on. Hold on tight.
Right, when I hit the gas, let go of my hips and wrap around my waist.
Exactly.
Just you got Corey driving and then 6'5 Michael just standing in the back. Standing on his pegs or whatever.
I feel like that's got, or like Mike, Corey just took his bike and went. Mike's like, I'll catch up to you. You know?
I'll walk. I make it work every time.
Yeah.
I'm always there. I'll be there on time.
Trust me. Yeah. I may be fucking dying. I can barely kill anybody, but I can teleport. Come on.
Yeah. You know, I'm not too beat up for these two legs to keep me moving.
Exactly.
That's funny, man. Yeah, I got Corey tag teams bodies with Michael. Yep. You started this. You invited me. Who said that? Oh, I got...
He said that to Lori.
He says that to Lori. Because Lori... Like, so they kind of blend it, in a sense. They blend the Michael trains the kid, but then the whole, like, imposing of that evil spirit. Because then now Lori sees this same kid and she feels something different almost immediately. Mm-hmm. And this is after his meeting with Michael.
Yeah, she knows.
Yeah, and
she
now...
She can smell it on him.
Yeah, and so now she's trying to convince her granddaughter. Like, there's even this one point where she gets into the house that he's been sleeping in and tries to, like, talk to him. And that's when he says that.
So
and
that's up for debate. Before we go any further, that's up for debate whether that actually took place. Or that was just in Corey's mind.
What, meeting with Lori like that?
Yeah, Lori being in the house. And
oh.
She's on the chair leaning back, and she's monologuing about evil and all that.
Yeah.
That's debated, and it makes a lot of sense.
I didn't know that.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, like, she kind of disappears out of nowhere. I mean, you know, things like that happen throughout the series, but, like...
I mean, have you not seen the way Michael moves for 12 movies?
Yeah, I know. But, just like little details, right? Which is not—it's not very obvious, but having watched the movie, this is probably like my fifth time watching it. But before they have their little interaction, when she's in the house, she flies a little paper airplane. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
The kid—I forget the kid's name—but in the beginning, he throws
he
an
was big
airplane.
On the, yeah, like, right.
So that's almost like maybe an indication that this is something else.
I could see that.
And just like, I don't know. Yeah, and like the way she kind of just like disappears into the wind like that, and you could interpret it as Corey just kind of having an argument with himself, you know, but with Lori, but she's not really there because he knows she's an obstacle in his way at that point.
Ooh, that's interesting.
So I tend to believe that she actually wasn't there. Having said that, one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Sure, yeah.
Like,
it was a very intense scene.
We talk about like corny monologuing, like, oh my God, but that was great. Mm-hmm. That's one of the examples where you remember that Jamie Lee Curtis is a fucking great actress.
Absolutely.
You know? She's talking about like there are two different kinds of evil. You know what I mean? Great fucking scene.
Yeah.
And
And I got here as like a note to the note when he's yelling at her, you started this, you invited me. Like, I put, is that Michael or is that Corey talking?
Right, it's kind of paralleling.
Yeah, because he could be arguing with Lori in his head, but who's arguing with Lori?
Mm.
because, you know, it could be, and throughout the trilogy, plenty of people in the trilogy also blame Laurie for bringing Michael back.
True.
So, like, who is arguing with her, and who is that person even arguing with?
Mm-hmm.
It's a real fun scene. I hadn't known anything about people debating whether she was there or not. It puts a real, real fun spin on it. It just makes it better.
Totally.
Just makes it so much better. Really, really good. I think my last note, always nice to hear the breathing.
Yeah.
They brought the heavy breathing back in this one. And the ending is super interesting, man. You know, like, this dude, he goes to Laurie's house. I think he tries to kill her. She kind of bests him, and then he ends up killing himself. But then he's not dead.
Mm-hmm.
But then he is dead. Like it really makes you think, like, Jesus, did Michael really put himself in that? Because he stabs himself in the neck and then comes back, you know, like a few minutes later. Like, it's
yeah,
super interesting.
I kind of see it as, like, it's not exactly explained, but if you want to try to put an explanation on it, it's kind of like, I don't really see it as, like, as Michael is transferring his evil. Like, there's some sort of telepathic, telekinetic thing going on between him and Corey. I don't really see it like that. More like Corey's in, like, this crazy kind of vulnerable state, and Michael's energy maybe kind of rubs off on to him, rather than transfers.
Like, he's,
to
like, breeding his own evil.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's, like, it's almost just kind of the circumstances he was in kind of led to this. And, but as far as, like, him, like, stabbing himself in the neck and then still being alive, it's almost like the idea of, like, how, like, evil will, like, kind of transcend people, which they kind of, like, talk about throughout the whole fucking series. But, like, now he's got that supernatural bent to him.
Mm-hmm.
That Michael has now.
Sure.
Because it's, like, his sort of evolution. But Mike, you know, he nips that in the bud real quick. He's like, no. I'm the OG. Then snaps his fucking neck. You go to sleep now, all right?
Yeah, yeah. I really liked seeing that.
Yeah, I love
it. It shows
It was only right. You gotta kill him.
It shows Michael's inhumanity. It shows that, like, you know, I was just resting. And almost, like, in a way, it could be like Michael was just using this dummy.
Totally.
I'm just using you. I'll let you think that we're buddies.
Yeah.
We'll go on a few fun dates. We'll go on a few dates. We'll kill some people.
Michael's mad manipulative.
But that's just because I'm getting my legs back, baby. Michael's a toxic boyfriend.
He's very toxic. Yeah.
And when that final fight with him and Lori, I mean, that it was real fun to see in the kitchen. They were fucking each other up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just she got the best of him, man.
Yep.
She got the best of him. They finally, truly end everything. They kill him. He's dead on the kitchen table. He's pinned with a fridge. He's got a bunch of knives in him. He's got a knife in his hand. They kill him, and then bring the whole town out to see them drop him in a grinder.
Naturally. Yeah, you got it. You got to make a ceremony out of it, dude.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's...
And that was a real fun CGI scene, seeing that body crumple up and kind of explode and pop like a nasty zit.
Totally.
It was real fun to watch. Just right for the camera, right, man? Oh, my God. You hide nothing to imagination.
Yeah, come on, dude. Show some fucking class, you bitch.
Yeah, come on.
You dirty bitch.
What are you doing? Be a lady.
There you go. But anyways, man. You got something else? You got another note?
No. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, there's some little things that you could interpret as little, like, metaphors or symbolism. In the beginning, when he's at the kid's house babysitting, before everything goes down, he goes into the fridge. And you remember there's beer in there, and there's chocolate milk. And he's looking at the beer. He picks up the beer, and he thinks, nah, I'm not gonna drink the beer. And then he goes for the chocolate milk.
Yeah.
Before he could drink the chocolate milk, you know, the kid Jeremy, that's his name, he starts doing his shenanigans, and then it goes from there, right? And later on, after he kills the kid and he's the town pariah, and right before he confronts the bullies, he buys chocolate milk at the convenience store,
right?
And then they confront him there, and he ends up, like, they're picking on him. He ends up getting so angry.
That's
that
where he meets Laurie.
He crushes the bottle. Again, the chocolate milk, though. You know, he doesn't get to drink chocolate milk. To me, it seems like a symbolism of, like, his innocence. Whatever that he'll never get back.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That, I don't know. Yeah, maybe that seems obvious. Yeah. The claws. Jesus Christ.
Or chocolate milk is the problem.
Or chocolate milk is the problem. But yeah, he never gets to drink the chocolate milk. And to me, yeah, it's like a little like symbolism of his innocence gone. But
I like that.
You like that? I like that too.
Like I noticed the milk in the beginning, and I noticed when he grabs the milk in the store. I just didn't make the link. Like I saw the points, mm-hmm. and I didn't even think of like, he never gets to fucking drink his chocolate milk. Like, he can't catch a break. Every time he goes for the milk, something terrible happens.
You're right.
You know, because if not for the milk, I mean, well, I'm not blaming the milk, but like, you know, the milk in the beginning of the movie is right before he kills the kid.
Right.
The milk at the store is right before, you know, he has this altercation with these people who put him in Michael's path.
Right.
So milk's the problem. I think milk's the problem.
Yeah, God.
Especially the chocolate one.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, those brown cows. Yeah, you gotta stay away from those brown cows.
Stay away from the brown cows. Go for the red one, strawberry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I heard there's a green cows now that you should not get them angry.
Why? They sound like they spit out money.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point.
Those are the udders I want to suck on. The green cow udders.
But we got to talk about the kills in the movie real quick, because there's some brutal fucking kills. It's just as brutal as Halloween Kills. There's just less kills, really. But like, when the kills happen, they're fucking gnarly, dude.
Yeah.
And the whole junkyard scene. He fucking puts a blowtorch to the kid's fucking mouth, dude.
Yeah.
What have you ever seen that in a movie? I've never seen it. Just fucking right in his mouth, dude.
That was gnarly.
I think they made like an animatronic like dummy or something. So they really like put a blowtorch to it.
Nice.
Yeah. All the effects are practical.
Hit that one chick through the fence with the van.
Yeah.
That was pretty gnarly.
Yeah, but she was alive, and then he just, you know, stomps her fucking head in. And then the DJ, when he goes to the fucking DJ.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Breaks into the booth, starts smashing his fucking head until his jaw dislocates.
Yeah.
And then cuts out his tongue.
Cuts out his tongue, leaves it on the record, and starts skipping the song.
Yeah. And then Alice
the
is hearing it on the radio in the car.
Yeah.
It's skipping. She's like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
turns it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, little cool stuff like that I like. It's cool, man. The movie's a cool vibe, dude. Corey, he's a really cool character. Like, you can really feel for him. The actor Rowan Campbell, like, he sells it, man.
Yeah.
And
he sells crazy pretty good.
The soundtrack is cool. There's like these like electronic rock kind of tunes, you know what I mean? Almost feels like the movie Drive, if you ever seen that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a cool vibe of a movie. I think it's my favorite of the franchise. I know that, you know,
of
that,
the franchise.
I'm sorry, did I say the franchise? I meant the trilogy.
Don't scare me like that.
It's up there. I'll say it's up there in the franchise, but of the trilogy, I think it's my favorite. I got to be honest. I like the ones that that take swings, man.
Yeah.
I find myself liking like movies like Halloween 6, Halloween 2, and Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, and this one. Like they're the movies that like they try to do something different. And for me, they largely succeed, especially 6. That movie's a masterpiece.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to each their own. That's a real strong word for it.
Yeah, no. No, I hear you. I understand. I understand why people wouldn't like 6. I understand why people wouldn't like Ends. They wanted to.
I mean, I ended up giving Ends an 8.
Yeah.
You know, so for the trilogy, I went 9, 8, 8.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I have a favorite out of the three, because they're all so different.
They really are. Yeah.
You could argue that each one is the best of the three.
Right.
Like, one is just, it's safe, but it's classic. It's hard-hitting. Two is, like, it's ramped up. It's violent. It's fun. It's campy. And then three is just complete pivot. You would never, you know, I could give you 100 chances after watching two to guess where it would go. And you wouldn't guess that it would go there.
No.
And then it ends up being good. So I really liked all three of them.
Yeah.
I wonder what, you know, like, what do you think is, I mean, obviously they kill him. The only way to bring him back would have to be on some goofy Jason shit. Like, the devil puts him back together.
The trilogy's done.
So the only way that they would make a new Halloween movie would be another hard reboot.
Yep.
Do you want a more modern retelling of one? Or if they're going to reboot it, just make brand new everything and then Michael being the only link?
That's what I... Yes.
It would have to be.
This is exactly how I feel about Scream at the same time, like, just, you gotta drop the legacy characters at some point, dude. Like, especially Laurie, dude. Oh my god, dude. I mean, she wanted it to end at fucking Resurrection. She proceeded to do three more movies, and I get it. You know.
Well, I mean,
money talks, but
yeah.
But like, for the sake of the audience, we don't need it anymore. I think a subversion, you know, like, do something different.
Yeah.
Like, Michael Myers is Michael Myers. Have his origin, I guess, be whatever. But maybe, I don't know, instead of killing his sister, he kills, like, his sister's friend or some, or some girl that, like, he has an interest in. I don't know.
But whoever he kills, show us the rack before he kills it.
Show us the rack.
Yeah, like, make sure he kills her in first person and he gets a good look at him and he locks eyes with nipples and then he can kill her all he wants.
Yeah.
But we got to see it.
That's the other thing with this trilogy. Not a lot of nipples. They
I don't think there were any in this trilogy.
They just rehashed the nipples of the first movie. They just take the trilogy. There's no nipples on its own.
I mean, great pair, though.
It's a great pair.
Yeah. Rob Zombie's had a lot of nipples.
Yeah.
Everybody was naked in that movie.
Yeah.
But everybody's naked in Rob Zombie movies.
That's true.
Rob Zombie movies in general have a lot of nipples.
We need you back, Rob.
Come on, Robbie.
The Weinsteins are not even a thing anymore.
Yeah, who needs them? Just give me something. Give me something, dude. Gritty.
Yeah.
But that ends Halloween. What a fun, real fun marathon of movies. What a fun series of videos to make. Fun talking shit. Fun analyzing and looking at all these, you know, just watching a series evolve and grow and and devolve and be rebooted and be changed and then not change anything. And then it's been a lot of fun watching these movies.
Yeah, I had a blast, man.
It's been a lot of fun.
It's been real. You want to wish the audience a happy Halloween?
Happy Halloween, folks. This should be dropping on Halloween. So right after you watch this, watch some of these movies.
Yeah, man.
And lock your doors and keep your tits inside your shirts, because once they're out, Michael's coming for you.
You're dead.
You're dead.
All right. Trick or treat, motherfucker.